welcome to the 14 News Podcast with your host, James Comfort.
Hiya, Minkers. How are you all doing? You all safe and well? I hope so. It's finally here. I've been promising this interview now for a few years, and we've never managed to get round to doing it, but it's here today. The interview with Paul Sinclair of Truth Proof fame. It's just an interview with Robbie Williams as well. It's entertaining. He's a really lovely man. He's really kind. He's engaging. He's interesting. He's well researched. I think you're going to find it fascinating. So I hope you all really enjoy it. I've got a massive favour to ask everyone that listens. And if you all do it, it'll be amazing and really help me out. We are, as you know, I was in talks with TV, but I decided to launch this channel, which may turn out to be a silly idea from what could have been a quick and easy income in a way. But I don't just do this for stardom. That's not what I'm after. If it's not done right, then I'm not going to be interested. And Matt Cooper approached me. He's a professional videographer. And we've launched our own YouTube channel. And the idea is if we can demonstrate to TV companies that we can have a channel where we tell ghost stories, folklore, and do paranormal investigations that remain integrity and don't exploit you guys that watch them by putting in fake things, but they can still be entertaining and interesting because of the character that we bring in, then we're hoping that that will turn into something then we can take to TV channels after. And just by subscribing will help the algorithms of more people finding us. So I know it's a big ask. It's asking you to, you know, click on a link and take time out of your day, and everyone's busy. So I understand not everyone will do it, but anyone that does, just in advance, thank you so much. And as you can see, like, the production value on the first video that is up there is really high quality. Matt's an absolute genius with this. We're going on an investigation tonight as well to hopefully bring you some footage and kind of paranormal experiences. But also, this interview is there. This interview will be uploaded, so you can go and watch it. If you'd rather watch it rather than just listen, you can see myself, Paul, and Matt on there talking with our beautiful faces. I'm sure you'll all agree. So, thank you to anyone that does that. And if you can also get your grandma, your cat, your best mate, your kids, everyone else to do that and just share it, it will make a difference. And it means I can do this show every week. That is the plan, that I could take time out and actually make this a podcast that I could do every week. That's the dream. It would be the dream to investigate and explore the paranormal and bring things to you and bring the people that I have to pay that I can't do now and things like that. So thank you in advance. I'm not going to waffle on because I always do that too much. I know I do. I'm just going to drop that interview. So thank you so much. Look in the links for Paul's work and for the new YouTube channel. And otherwise, have a really good day. And I hope you enjoy this interview. Much love, everyone. Love and light. Take care. So good morning. Welcome, Paul Sinclair. Been requested to be on the podcast more than anyone else. It's really an honour to have you on the show, sir.
Thank you very much, James. It's good to spend, I don't know, however long we spend with yourself and Matt. I'm sure that we'll cover a few points of interest.
Excellent.
And yeah, fire away. Can I just say, James, I don't want to spoil proceedings or filming, but if I get a phone call, I'm waiting for a doctor's phone call about a relative, I will have to take it. You know what they're like, but
no problem at all. Yeah, absolutely no problem at all. So, Paul, you're well known throughout the world for your healthy interest in all this stuff, loads of research, real passion, and dedicating yourself to it. How did that start?
I think it's always been there, you know, mate. You don't realise at first, but, you know, due to things that happened in childhood, things that at the time you don't even know aren't, they're off the page, off the scale of normal, you know? That kind of lives with you. And I wonder how many other young people experience these things and it dissipates and they forget about it. But then it started up again for me at about age 30, I think 1993 it started up. I'm 61 now, so whoever do the maths. And it started up again. So there's a big gap from 14-year-old-ish to 30, in my 30s. And then it dropped off 1998. But everything that happened in childhood, I didn't say I remembered. They're all cameos of little events. But it brought it all back, and it's just put me on the path I'm on now. You know, but you know, life gets in between all of this, and you can't let this take over. We're sat talking here now, and we're talking about unexplained phenomena, but there's a massive part of your life that don't include any of this. You know, when I go out with friends, or we visit people, and bulk of time I don't talk about it because it's not everybody's interest. And I think, you know, Matt, yourself, we all know that. We all realize that there's some people that just become obsessive. And even though you might call it obsessive, last night I were on Clifftops till late. This morning, 5 a.m., I'm at Danes Dyke. But I just love it. I mean, I'm 61. We're only here once. I could have spent it in bed, or I can sit and watch soaps and TV and sit drinking beer. And I love beer, by the way. But what I'm saying is I want to just get out and experience everything I can in these locations. 99.9% at time, there's nothing to see or experience, but you're out. I don't know whether that answers a bit of it, James. It's, I started from childhood.
Yeah. And what were the kind of the things in childhood that spurred that on? I know you've written a book. So what sort of things kind of occurred that started that interest? And how did it feel at first? Was it something frightening or...
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrifying. I wrote the book Night People. And I wrote that book after I'd written, I think, three of the other Truth Proof books. And, you know, I think I'd done the third, and then I wrote Night People. And I spoke to Whitley Strieber for years. You'll know who Whitley Strieber is. And in 2006, I told Whitley about some of the things that had happened to me. And then when I wrote the book, I says, look, I've written Night People. He's done me a little bit of a write-up in it. And he questioned, do you really want to go with this? He says, because you're sort of opening your soul up to people, opening your heart up to people with things that you're saying you've seen, experienced, and not everybody's going to believe it. But you know what? I mean, Whitley wrote Communion. When you've experienced it, you can either lie to yourself. You don't have to go into a bar and start with a T-shirt on and tell everybody, look, this is what I'm into. But if you get in conversation with people and it comes up, I'm not going to lie to people and pretend that it hasn't happened because it might not agree with their viewpoint. I just tell them it happened. I mean, the first thing, they're all cameos of events. And I can remember waking up, we lived in this little council house in Old Denneby, which is a village on outskirts of Mexborough. And I've told this story quite a few times, and the curtains were fiberglass. Which is a joke, you wouldn't have fiberglass curtains now, but they kind of glistened and they were grey-blue colour. And I woke up in night and I could see, I think, four sets of eyes in curtains. I shouldn't have been able to see anything, dark room, but I could see them. At back of us, we'd got pasture and cattle, Frisian cows, all us in fields, all us coming up to a fence, and you'd hold your hand out and give them a bit of grass or something. And I'm a little boy, I'm 4 or 5 years old. All I can think is that they're the eyes of cows. That's the only thing I can relate to. There's no life experiences. We've not been watching sci-fi movies. My dad's not interested in any of this. My mum ain't. They've not filled me head with any of this. And then it's almost chameleon-like. They come out at curtains, and I don't see them come to me, but the next thing, they stood around me. And I don't know if I'm crying that time. I'm not sure, but probably were, and that stopped. And then I don't know how long passed. Who writes it? You know what I mean? I never wrote about it. I didn't write. You think you're a little boy, you're not writing about anything like this, do you know? So that happened, and then there's another time it happens, and another time it happens, and in different scenarios in that room. And it's just terror, it's just absolute fear, because it gets you so frightened that you're waiting. Every night you're waiting. And, you know, there'll be people there, there'll be academics and people who are into psychology will be thinking, yeah, it's clearly lucid dreaming, or it's clearly this guy's deluded. I haven't got any defence mechanism to argue with you, because you hold all the aces, my friends, because the general populace can't get bend their heads around this. But I can't deny it's not happened. I can't deny I've not seen it. And what twisted it for me is in, I think it was 1997, back end of 1997, because I got kind of scars all over my arms. But you can see some of them, but when it gets sunny, because I have real pale skin, you can see a lot more. But in 1997, there were a visitation that left three big wounds on my back, big holes. Obviously, I've got all medical records to back it up. You're not going to get a doctor, James, that's going to turn around and go, oh, this guy was visited by some kind of, I won't say extraterrestrial, because I'm always loath to say that, but some kind of being that's beyond our understanding. People are not going to say that. And I never told them. But I've got the medical records that say things like, we are perplexed by the punch hole lesions that keep appearing on this then young man, you know what I mean? And sending it to, you know, skin specialists, dermatologists and people to view the medical notes, view the histology reports and the biopsies that they've done on them, which talk about the wounds extending deep into the dermis and all sorts of things on my back as well, you know, and you can't, I don't know, maybe I'm, I don't know. Everybody's going to come up with a solution. Some people are going to think, well, there's a bit of credibility to what he's saying. And some people, it's going to be too much for some and not enough for others. All I can do is deal with my truth. That's all you can do. And that's all any of us can do. But I do think by putting this stuff out and not just, I don't know, having your head in clouds and believing that everything that occurs is the result of some kind of alien visitation or some kind of demonic apparition, you know, let's be level that, you know, 99.999% of the time everything's normal. You know, there's five books there, and people think that when they go to these locations like Bempton, Speighton, the forests of North Yorkshire, and I know you're familiar with them, they think, oh, something must be happening because this guy's wrote this book and it's just packed with accounts. No, it's not like that. These go back decades and decades and decades, and we've just fitted them I've just fitted them together. All I'll say is that these locations have the potential to produce a little bit more in the way of unexplained phenomena than other locations. I know I jumped about a bit there, James, but, you know, just hit me with whatever you want.
I think that's similar to kind of our experience in terms of what we do investigations, and we don't charge, because I think if we charge for someone coming on with us, then there's an expectation something will occur. And you know, there's this hall near Leicester, and a woman's been seen walking along the corridors for centuries, since the Tudor times. But it might happen two or three times a year. And, you know, so you just have to be at that one time that it's going to occur.
That's spot on. And it like you just said, it doesn't perform to order, does it?
Yeah.
It's so random. What do you think then? I'm kind of asking you now. What do you think then that you're looking at when you look at this woman that's appeared year after year, decade after decade, century after century then? What do you think that is? Is that some kind of almost imprint in time that's being captured? Or is there an intelligence to what you're looking at?
I think so. Matt will have slightly different views as well. But I think for me, that's what I call a ghost, is that thing that is a residual continuation, and whether it's the past is actually just imprinting and it's still existing on the space-time continuum, or it is just an echo reverberating through, you know, we know it happens more in stone houses, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I feel is very different to poltergeists, which I know a lot of it's quite contentious, and I know I upset a lot of people in the paranormal community. I don't believe it's the dead. I believe it's a separate consciousness that exists and replicates sometimes the dead and interacts. And it's a bit like, and one of the questions I wanted to give you before I let Matt kind of give his view after this is I often wonder why I have a lot of poltergeist activity, and I'll go a place and stuff does occur. And it's like, so why me? And I was going to ask you, why do you think you were chosen, and do you think it's more common? But before I do that, I'll let Matt give some ideas on what he thinks this stuff is.
Yeah, well, it's I haven't quite made my mind up yet, really. That's why I'm coming along for the ride and doing these investigations, try and find out actually what is occurring and see if there's any scientific measures to say, because there is sort of evidence of the electromagnetic sort of spikes affecting people's brains? Is it something literally linked to that location? We all know that ghosts sometimes, or spirits, or any of these phenomena seem to be linked to a specific location. So is it more about that and the energy within those spaces that allows for these things to happen? So I think I'm kind of agnostic at the moment. I think that's the great thing about all of the new tools and technologies that are coming out, is we can kind of delve more into what actually is happening.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we've got to remain completely open and not segregate different parts of the phenomena and become that entrenched in, I think, like James just said, that, you know, there's certain people that are upset because he doesn't believe that the poltergeist is quite the ghost phenomena. And, you know, there's so many examples, Matt, that where there's the bleed through into other types of unexplained phenomena. And unfortunately, and I think it is changing, but unfortunately, a lot of researchers just get stuck in their own niche. I'm interested in ghosts and anything that infiltrates that, I don't want to know. And it can't be to do with my little genre, my sphere that I'm interested in. And like, you know, the voice phenomena, the mind speak, it runs through everything. You look, when you look at spiritualism and you look at the clairvoyant and the clairaudience, some of these people who are allegedly relaying voice from spirit hear it in the head, the voice, the mind speak on what. And then you've got, and I've said this before, but obviously we're going to a different audience now. You've got the hunter in America thinks the notion of Bigfoot, Dogman, what a load of rubbish. These things don't exist. And then one day is there with his 30-yard six walking through the forest, and one of these things steps out onto the path. Everything's changed, you know, because the podcasts are out there for people to listen to. Thinks about taking a shot because he's terrified. Speaks to him in his mind. It's the same science. It's the same. It's the same type of principles that are at work. Alien abduction scenario. Man, woman, group of people laid on some kind of bench in some unfamiliar surroundings. These beings are speaking to him in the mind. So we're either dealing with one phenomena that's putting different masks on. And let's forget, you know, let's just throw it out there. Let's throw it open. And so ghosts, everything, it's all one, coming from one phenomenon, one intelligence. Or is it a phenomena of many that are all presenting and using then the same exotic science from behind this firewall that you, James, myself can't penetrate? It's all working from behind that firewall. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. And, you know, so if you said to me, well, I don't agree with you on that one, I can take that and say, James said the same. What I can't take, and what none of us should take, is say, no, you're wrong. Because none of us know. We're all kind of testing water, Matt, aren't we? We're all out there, and I think you just said it, new technologies. It's advancing the cause. It's enabling us to look a little bit deeper into the abyss. And what it... James, that's just said, like, you know, why me? Why? Because probably is seen that part of the unexplained. And unlike a lot of people who just shelve it, and I don't want to talk about that, is looking a little bit deeper and he's more open to it. You know, that's one possibility of why you. I ain't got an answer. I'm as green as everyone else out there. I'm just searching for answers to my own pieces of the puzzle, and I think everyone else is, and I think that's what makes it so. It's quite exciting when you get to these locations, because the potential's always there. But yeah,
what is it? Do you think this part of the world is quite special, isn't it? With it, there is so much activity, and I know you've written three books already on that, and
well,
doing
there's
more.
four on that, and there's the Night People, the fifth book, yeah. Yeah.
And the documentary Wolflands, yeah, which has done really, really well. What do you think it is about this area of land?
I don't know. It's got a rich history. I mean, you go to these locations, James, like I've said it earlier, I know you're familiar with Forest North Yorkshire, and they're desolate. But they're not. They've had footfall. They've had habitation. There's people, ancient people, Neolithic people. If you go to Flixton, you've got the Mesolithic period. You know, it's been populated by people over thousands and thousands of years. Just because we can't see that existence now, the evidence is there in the ancient earthworks, the standing stones. That doesn't mean that that's the reason we're seeing unexplained phenomena. But when you think about it, there's a lot of the places that this presents, it is in places where there's ancient earthworks. So as ancient man, who would have thought slightly different to us, I would have thought, to his intellect level may have been far superior to ours in as regards living off the land and things. But if we'd have shown him a computer, he'd have been scratching his head a bit. So I'm not trying to downplay ancient man, but what I'm saying is they must have recognized, if this was presenting back then, and there's no reason to believe it wasn't, they must have recognized the importance of these areas of land, because location is key. Location does seem prominent in a lot of these things, and they must have recognized the importance to bury their dead there. I'm doing this shape as though that's burying the dead, but you know, the burial mounds, the tumuli, and in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, but obviously these were populated areas back then, 3,500-4,000 years ago. We've got Danes Dyke, you know, where I've been today. I've been this morning, 5 a.m. and 2.5 miles earthwork cut across the land, cutting Flamborough Head off from the mainland. You know, originally people thought that the Vikings, the Danes, constructed Danes Dyke, until I think late 1800s, this guy called Pitt Rivers, sounds like an Indiana Jones character, doesn't he? But that was his name, Pitt Rivers. He excavated areas of Danes Dyke, and he found flint tools and antlers and stone tools, which predated the well before the Vikings. So it was built by Neolithic man, and or in the Neolithic period, you know. So it's fabulous. But why? Why did they do that? And then we've got all these stories coming out of Danes Dyke. It's a fascinating location. I'm absolutely fascinated by some of the areas in Broxer and Silpho and Cropton and Stape. Up in the forests up there, there's some amazing locations. And, you know, gamekeeper, friend of mine, or was a gamekeeper up there, like he said, when you step off the path, some of these areas, you know, said they were planted up in 1950s or 1940s. There gets no footfall. Nobody goes in. It's like walking into a forest in America. Do you know, I know some of the trees there will be far bigger than that, but everything's covered in moss. You've been in these environments yourself, so you know what I mean. So there's the potential for, I don't know, the ghosts of anything, the ghosts of our ancestors, the magical kind of realm of the fae. There's the potential for anything to reside in these locations. And who's to say it's not? Who's to say everything is not the fae? You know, it's not something I am au fait with, sorry for pardon the pun, but who's to say that everything is not the fae? Because there's so many stories. It fascinates me. It's one that I might really start delving into. And I'm not saying that's what it is, but it's fascinating that there's so many stories when you look back in folklore and when you look back through history, where these diminutive beings, the fae, can actually present as many different things and in many different forms and sizes. And I don't know. It all fascinates me, as you see.
I've met people that around this area that genuinely believe they've seen a boggle, a little man.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, look behind the sofa after seeing him run there and he's vanished. So
yeah,
I get a lot of stories. I had one recently that you'll like in Raincliffe Woods. This couple were out for a walk just as it was getting dark. They wanted to remain anonymous, but they sent me a what free word to the location. So I went down in the night. They said that there was lights going through the trees, and then a black figure kind of ran towards them and vanished. So I went out on my own, as I do, and it's pitch black. My torch wasn't working, as Matt will tell you. I often forget to charge it. I've got a new one now, though. But I was doing just a bit of kind of trying to see if I could get some interaction, and then a big rock just got thrown, not at me, but right by my feet, you know.
Really?
So I got that on video, so that's interesting. But yeah,
when you say big, James,
about that big, not massive, But yeah, pretty.
Well, I'll tell you what, you wouldn't want it to the side of your head, would you? About that
no.
Big. It's more than put you on your backside, wasn't it?
It was so... definitely a warning. The stone phenomenon is interesting. I'd had one in Newcastle where I was in a castle, in the church in the castle, and I was with one of my ex-girlfriends who was kind of poo-pooing it all. And then I was talking, and I said, "Oh, this is a," and she doesn't believe in it. And a rock just went past her head, and it was so close you felt the wind,
really.
But it didn't hit her, and it was hot, and it was.
I was just going to say, any of these stones warm?
Yeah, I didn't pick the stone up on the floor there because I jumped at first, and it probably cooled down by the time I kind of dealt with the shock of this rock because it was pitch black as well. But the this one was also just a completely different rock from any of the area. It was like a shiny brown, almost polished stone that it just apparated. So
what jumping to Raincliffe Woods then, and this stone that landed near your feet? Yeah, that, I mean, you're going to tell that story to other people or some people, and they're going to say, yeah, there's probably somebody in trees, you'd not took your torch, and they've thrown a stone to spook you. So we've got all those hands up. I mean, what I'd say to that is, yeah, possible. But do you know what I mean? Because we can't not do that. But let's jump to the unexplained area with the stone. That's showing a physical presence. It can, you know, to lift something that weighed, what, a pound, 2 pounds? I don't know. If it's that big, it's going to be maybe 3 or 4 pounds. And that's a physical presence. What were your gut feeling? Did it unnerve you? Is that to say, leave? What's it telling you?
I get excited. I know most people think I'm barmy because I do. I've been with the most violent poltergeist in the world on my own all night to raise money for charity. So these are the sort of things that I do. But I get excited. It obviously made me jump at first. And I would be more scared if it was a person. I'm pretty certain where I was, there was no one else around, and I would have heard it because I was recording and I was trying to do like interaction, so I was aware of my surroundings. And it was the stillness before it happened as well, almost like it's gone really quiet suddenly. And you could feel someone watching you. But I've also seen a ball with tendrils go through, and I felt it. I actually was driving and I felt I was about to crash and I slammed the brakes on. And I don't know why that happened.
Do you know, sorry if I'm cutting across you, because I was just going to speak about that. Now, was it you that sent it me? Because if not, I've also got a report in Raincliffe Woods. It's got to be you. Of a driver and a red ball with tentacles that went across
the road. Yes, that was me. Yeah. And then when I've put it out there, the amount of stories I've got back of other people of that area. And I know you went to investigate, there was that pulse as well in the
woods. That's correct.
Electronic pulse, which is
strange. Electronic pulse. And then there's a lady who went up there with her children. I'm not sure if it's scouts or beavers. There's the little groups that go up there, isn't there? And she took children up there. They'd got dog with her, Labrador dog. And she broke away from them just to, because they're safe. There were some more adults. And as she's near to the road. I'm familiar with wood, but I've only been in it 3 or 4 times, if that makes sense. So the path's running parallel with the road. And there were like a little dipped down bit. And you went over like a stream, or it would have been if it were, and then up the other side. I'm trying to explain it in case you know just where I am. And it's close to the road. But she said on the path, about 2 foot off the ground, 3 foot off the ground, is an oval cloud. And it's defined. It's not misty anywhere. It's daytime and there's a cloud. But now, that could be some strange earth phenomena. We realise that. But she walked through it with the dog. Dog didn't seem to be bothered. Turned back and it had gone. But yeah, talking about Raincliffe Woods, lots and lots of reports and accounts from that area, which is fascinating because, as you know, everywhere up there's linked. They're only separated by name. Mm. Yeah, basically, aren't they? You know, they're only separated by names. It's the same location all the way up to Stape and all, you know, Cropton. It's just fabulous area.
Yeah.
We spent nights up on Jugger Howe. I don't know if you've been up there and on moors overlooking forests and all sorts. And, you know, whilst making Wolflands, and I love it. I mean, I'm off in there again in the next few weeks. And we had some nights in oh God, I can't remember the name of it now, but it'll come to me while we're doing this, with some guys who had a weird experience in there with what they perceived as shadow beings, to the point where one of them got pulled backwards.
No, yeah, well, this is what this couple were reporting, like a black, really? Completely black person. And I've got, there's a hairdresser in town. And again, she wants to remain anonymous, but her brother actually wrote his car off because a black being stood in the road and he swerved to avoid him, and he crashed his car into a tree. I've seen bolts of light as well, just bolts of light, like diagonally on.
Is this in that location, James?
Yeah, so all this was on the main road on through the woods.
I'm not ignoring you. I'm actually looking for something because I've just wrote something up. Just bear with me 1 minute. If I can't find it, guys, I can't find it. But I can just relay this. And I think we're going back to, if I've got date wrong, somebody will jump all over you, see. But I think we're going, it's difficult. You know, when you're reciting things straight from top of your head, and yeah. I might say, oh, it was November 12th, 2019. And it weren't it, what, 14th? You're not doing it because you're lying. You're doing it because you're heading to computer. Well, it is as such, but it's not. Anyway, let's do this. And it's not really terrifying, but I wish I'd got the information in front of me, because there's a guy who had a Honda Civic, and he used to like going off-roading in the Honda Civic. And we're only going back a few years, and he'd go around the forests in North Yorkshire. We'll not say his name. He said it's all it had were a few spotlights on it. Well, not really flash, but he loved sort of wandering about the forest trails. And on this particular day, he went down towards the monastery. So you know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah.
He knew that there's a scout camp further up, and he decided not to take that. And because I haven't got it in front of me, I think he said I decided to go west side towards Broxer. Would that be right? I'm saying, would that be right to you, James? Because I know you're more familiar with the location.
Yeah, Matt spends a lot of time up there as well, yeah.
So am I right with that, Matt?
Yeah, I think so. Sounds about right to me.
So off he goes. Come on, dog, move. I've got my little dog here. Apologies, people. So off he goes up there. Never been before. So he's off going up the road, going up this single track road very slowly, he says, because there's a lot of loose gravel and things. And I don't know if you guys realize, well, you do. I know you know, but you can soon pop a tyre, can't you? I mean, tearing about. He said, but all of a sudden, just like James said, this strange silence overtook him. He says, I'm in the car. I've got the music on. He says, but just something just fell over me. He said, like the descent into this strange fear. He said, I was just overcome by fear. He said, I spent time. It's daylight. He said, I spent time in and around the forests. I'd not been in that particular area, but something was saying, get out. Get out. Said, I drove for about another 100 to 200 yards until I came to an area where I could do a 3-point turn. He says, now then I left that track at like over 50 mile an hour. He said, with no regard for anything really. He said, whether there were people or not, I was just terrified. So that's a strange one. So I don't know whether you've ever come across anything like that up in those areas, Matt, have you, personally?
No, not personally, but I am interested by this, the what you mentioned about the electronic pulse. And yep. I think it would be interesting to find out the prevalence of those within these phenomena. Is that always linked? Is it happening? Obviously, people don't have recording equipment at those times to actually measure that. But that would be an interesting thing to find out, I think, whether those are actually linked in any way.
And I think they are linked, you know. Even if we don't understand how. I've got a friend called Peter Masters, and he bench tests a lot of electronic equipment for companies who develop it. For instance, he's been working some of the stuff they've used at Skinwalker, Peter's friends have made. So with the things that they're using there, I won't say all of the things, but some of the items, and we're actually now using the updated version with help of Peter. So I go with Peter, and he'll take his laptop, and he's got these pieces of equipment that measure different types of electronic frequencies and what have you. Went to the Rudston Monolith. Unbelievably, it were kicking out 1.6 gigahertz.
Yeah, we've had some experience there.
But the thing is, James, we're not just saying it. We've got it. If you looked at the live stream the other night, we talked about it, and I didn't know Les were going to do it, and he actually got the bit of footage up, and you can see it on screen. It's kicking out 1 point. It shouldn't be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be doing that. We went to Bempton, and at the back of the old... I'm just looking at this dog. What are you doing? At the back of the old RAF base there, not on the land, by the way. We always discourage anybody going on land. It's private. 1.6 gigahertz. Then you jump to other side of the world, one of places of high strangeness there, Skinwalker. They're into this 1.6. What is it about that frequency? I don't know. But these areas seem to be able to exhibit or produce that. The pulse. A guy sent me recordings of it, didn't he? I don't know whether I've still got... I will have them somewhere. I don't know where... I remember us talking about it, and I can't even remember a year now, if I'm being truthful. And that were up around Raincliff, weren't it?
Yeah. I went up there. So I got sent a video of just someone filming the dogs, and there was this vroom, vroom pulse.
That's it. That's the one, yeah.
And then... But the camera was fine everywhere else. It was just in this one spot. And I went round about the same time. It was about 8:30 at night, I think. And I was getting zero on my electromagnetic reader all the way through. Yeah. And when I went to this one spot, there's no pylons nearby. It's a marsh and underground, so there's not going to be anything buried. And it was just pulsing, just consistently pulsing.
So what it about that area? And have you been back to it since with the same bits of tech?
Yeah, not had anything. There was I did go with a group once, and everyone was like, I know this sounds odd, but I feel like we're being watched, but we could have been. So you know, we can't rule that out. But yeah, the Rudston Monolith, we've so I had a documentary maker, Amelia, she's coming over from Finland and she's filming me doing some stuff, and we went up there, and when nothing happened all night, as often happens with these investigations, as you know, until we got to my car. And the car, every single window had been opened in my car, every single one. And to do that in some, you know, to give it some rational explanation, people said, oh, your battery's low. So I tested that. It was fine. People said, if you hold the buttons down on that, and it's like, it doesn't work on my model. I tried everything that I offered the skeptics to do suggestions. The only way that could have happened, if someone snuck up behind me, unseen, pickpocketed me, went to the car. You have to put the key in the car to turn the electrics on to wind the window down, so the lights of the car would have lit up, and open and close the door without me hearing it, wound the window down without me hearing it in an area that's pretty silent apart from the odd car going by, and then walked back and put the keys back in my pocket. There's absolutely no explanation.
No explanation. And do you know, James, it's fascinating. It makes me... I want to talk about this guy called Alex Valentine in a minute, but that's why I looked down and just made a note. But I want to talk about the windows. Went to Bempton probably 2018 with a friend of mine, Bob Brown. He has his own radio show, but Bobby's done it for years and years. But interesting, unexplained, real open-minded old guy. He's in his 70s, about 77. Not that that matters, but, you know, he's never lost his enthusiasm. That's what I'm saying. So he comes to Bempton with me. We're on a car in car park. I've got an Honda CRV. And they're pretty good. The alarm system on Honda and that is pretty good. You don't even hear it go off much, but if it does, you know there's something wrong. So, gets in car, locks my car up, go down to the cliff tops. We come off, say, 10, half past 10 at night. We've been there since, it's winter, we've been there since 6, 7. Nothing. No, it's happened. So, I get in the car, and I've got a thing, to be honest with you. I'm if somebody gets in my car and the leap seatbelt outside, it annoys me. If they shut that car door and you hear that clunk and you realise that it's on your paintwork, isn't it? It's an old car, but I still don't like it. It annoys me. So there's like a metallic clunk. And I went, Bob, you've left seatbelt outside. Kind of snapped at him. He goes, no, I haven't. It's here. So he hadn't. Fair enough. So I didn't say sorry or I'd not really been nasty with him. But, you know, so anyway, that was that. And then start the car up. And as we're driving off, he goes, put his hand through the window and it's open. That's odd. You know, I'm sure it was shut when you left. I don't go around tapping all windows and checking, but I'm sure it was shut when you left. So we put window up. I says, you must have just caught it, Bob, as you know, the remote, the, you know, the button is, because it's all, everything's electric in the newish cars now, aren't they? It's not that old, even though it's an old Honda. So, you know, that explanation. So we drive out. Suddenly, I've got cold on my neck. Stop the car. Back passenger window behind me is halfway down. It's impossible. And it's not impossible to get the windows down, but it's just impossible. If you put a window down on that Honda, and anybody who's got a Honda will back me up on this, if you unlock it and walk away, the alarms go off. It won't let you leave it long with windows down, it locked. It sets the alarm off. Never heard a thing. No alarms went off. So I don't know what happened there. I can't explain that one. It's a strange one. I mean, maybe it's a glitch in electrics. Yeah. You know, we're always going to get that. But just want to jump to this. You're on about the frequency and the pulse. An American guy came over. He were interested in me placing some random number generators in various locations on cliff tops. Not just placing them, I had to find somebody who could home them, you know, a farm or somewhere. And we were only going to do two. And no extra ground with this guy, but that was original agreement. But it grew. He wanted, suddenly, I'd got to find about five locations, and there were about six different types of electrical equipment. And I realized that this was going to become quite a task for me, and I've got enough to do without any of that. Do you know what I mean? Two and collecting data and getting data to him once every two or three weeks would have been okay, but not five or six, and five or six different types of information that I've got to get to him with everything else I've got to do. I just didn't want to do it. Where am I going with this? But prior to that, he'd already been to location, not because of me, but he'd also been to Skinwalker to try and, like you do, like Matt does, like we all do, to soak up these areas and see what we can experience. He'd been to the Hoyabaku Forest, which is supposed to be one of the most haunted forests in the world. I think it's in Romania, I think. I'd love to go. And he'd been to Bempton. Guess where he had one experience? Bempton. And he told me he was walking back along the clifftop path towards where he was staying in a caravan at Flamborough, I believe. And his dad lived in UK, so he'd come to see his dad. And as he's walking back in the quite late at night, in between half 11 and half 12, he just walks. And as he's walking along clifftops, there's nothing there. If you've ever been, Matt, you know, there's nothing there. He says, and suddenly he sees this, but a lot sharper. Imagine a shrew. You know, little shrew, but just there in his ear. And he stops, and it's there. Steps back and it stops. Steps forward, it starts. Steps back and it stops. He found himself doing that at night. Then he moved forward and walked out of it, turned round, and it's in other ear. So it's coming from one direction. And so are we talking a paranormal experience? I don't know what we would describe that as, really, but it's a strange experience. So out of all the places he'd been, the only one that gave him a bit of an head scratcher was that. So he didn't see some shadow being, he didn't see a UFO, didn't see some alien big cat or some cryptid type creature, but he heard a strange sound that really didn't make any sense to say where it were coming from inland. I'll give him that. It were coming, but there's only farmland. There's nothing there. I mean, I were up there last night. But it's just, we've heard the strange high-pitched noise. I were up there with a mate of mine called Steve Ashbridge, and he were with his girlfriend at the time. I'll not say who it was, but she used to be on Shameless. Not that it matters, but yes, and Emmerdale Farm. But she's not really got an interest in unexplained, but she were with Steve, so she came up. And I could hear it, and I says, can anybody? She says, I can hear it, but Steve couldn't hear it. And she'd got like an headband on. She put it over her ears. She says, we're going to have to leave. She says, I can't stand it. And it didn't just stop at her request that we were going to leave, but it stopped after a while. But we both heard it start again. Don't know what it is. That could be some kind of military tech, you know, that's been sort of, I don't know, tested or not knowing. And we might just be caught up in whatever it is. Because don't forget, out at sea, you know, I think there's a submarine training ground about 15, 20 miles off Bempton and Flamborough. Do you know what I mean? Oh, that's what it says it is. It says it on maps. Is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the best UFOs I've ever seen was above the Stuxton Hill.
Really?
Years ago. And it was just, it was good because five of us saw it all at once, and it was a giant, giant glowing green ball that was just hovering above it, and then it just shot up vertically.
Above the radar base,
yeah, right above the radar base, yeah,
fascinating. Yeah, you know, I've spent loads of time up around there in night as well, and it's a brilliant place. As you'll know, it's, well, no or don't know, it's oldest operational base in world, right. Radar base in world, Staxton Wold. And I've no proof of this, but I believe that it goes down quite a bit deeper than what people would have you want to believe. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a lot
more
to it.
I spoke to an electrician that used to do service in there, and he said that's the only thing he told me. He said it does go underground. Yeah, he wouldn't say any more than that.
Well, I was told, and if you get an ordnance survey map, you can kind of test this. So if you go to RAF Bempton, which remember closed in 1970, 68 really, but all it says 70, closed in 70, and then if you go to Speeton, there's another base that's still active. It's still in use. I don't know if you know about that one, James.
No.
But there's a base at Speeton, which is 3 miles away. Do you know where Honeypot Pub is in Dottrell?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, in between there, on Jutsey, you'll see some like upturned. They look like upturned pie dishes, and it's all grassed over, and there's masts sticking up, and there's an underground facility there, and then you've got Staxton Wold. Well, if you run a ruler through a map, they're just about all in line. And somebody told me that there's an underground tunnel from Bempton all the way to Staxton Wold. Well, bearing in mind that I think Staxton Wold were 1935, Bempton were 1940. I'm not saying, oh, they've got to be linked, but it's fascinating nonetheless. And it could be just a rumour. I've got stories, sort of very good, strong stories that of tunnels from Buckton Hall. In the cellars of Buckton, leading down to the cliffs. I mean, I'm assuming those passageways now will be long since covered in rockfall, because it's an elderly lady that told me that her dad was the head gardener at Buckton Hall many years ago, and she went down into the cellars and they went through a door and went. I realise this in paranormal people, but I still think it's fascinating when we're talking about these areas.
Yeah.
And she says, and we went on to not a beach. There's no beach there, but there's rocks and rocky outcrops. So, yeah, and once again, loads of stories about these passageways. And interestingly, if you go to Rudston Monolith, which we've just been talking about, and then get your ordnance survey map, it's not absolutely bang on, but it's very close. And Sado here measured it on Google Earth, and I think it's about 200 metres away from Willie Howe, the burial mound, to Staxton Wold. Just run that through it. Rudston Monolith, Willie Howe, Staxton Wold. How could people have known? I mean, because Staxton Wold were built on an old Roman hill fort, and we don't know what it was before then. And if you just look over, the distance can't be more than 3/4 of a mile, you've got Sharp Howe. Are you familiar with Sharp Howe?
Are those the Ice Age burial grounds that are in a line as well for the monolith?
The Neolithic burial grounds. Neolithic. It's a barrow cemetery. And I think there's five or seven. I think you can see about five still, but I think there were more. But that's built 500 foot above sea level, and early man's placed these burial mounds there. Fabulous. And we're asking why we're seeing all these strange phenomena in these areas, yet other people have been viewing it. We're just standing in the footsteps of the other people who've known about this and dressed it up. They talk about folklore as though it's somewhat spoken about by some, I don't know, some village idiot. It's not. They're speaking about it with best vocabulary that they can at that time, you know, because their priorities were totally different to ours, weren't they? You know, but nevertheless, I think that we're all looking at the same things. I don't think it's changed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how straight some of these lines are as well. Matt was looking at that at Rudston, weren't you, Matt? The lines of these burial grounds from the monolith and what that significance must be.
Yeah, well, they had it in the church, didn't they? They had the map with, there was three different lines running through Rudston, and they all carried on to other notable places.
Yeah.
I think Rudston's just a really interesting place anyway. You've got that sort of Neolithic or Mesolithic monolith sat 3 meters from a Christian church. There's this very interesting, why did they put it there? Is there a reason behind that? I think, and all of these things, there's people having experiences that they can't explain. There is something happening there, and it always seems to be along these same like you say, lines, and how no one's found anything yet of
no, that's true.
Why?
Matt, the lines, I'm not heavily into ley lines. I'm not saying there's nothing to them, but there's three come from the monolith and different areas converge at Bempton. Have you seen that?
Yeah, there is.
Did I tell you about the potential time travelers at the monolith? Well, no. I haven't. Listen, we've been talking for about 50 minutes and I'm saying, did I tell you about it? My mind's not that mashed. Obviously not told you about it. I received this recently from the actual witness, and we're going right back to, I think it's 1994, and this guy wanted to visit the area of East Yorkshire. Let's say we're going to Bridlington or Filey, I don't know, but he wanted to see the monolith either, you know, en route or on the way back. Summer's day, he's with his young wife, and they pull up at Rudston Church, and you know the score. You've got the double gates, then you've got the little gate at the side, and if you park low enough down and you open your car door, you can see monolith through that passageway at that little gate. So his wife says, "I'm not going to look at it. I'm staying in car." So this guy Nigel, real name, decides he's off to see the monolith. Wife opens car door and sits watching him, and he walks down. At first, he goes into the church and has a little look around. Not far then, en route to the monolith, he bumps into two people. And he literally told me this last week. He said, they're dressed strange. He said, almost gothic or medieval, or what you'd imagine, a Norseman or something. He said, really strange. But let's think that they could have been to Whitby and dressed as goths or anything. You know, let's stay rational with this. But that's what he's telling me. So, you know, he says, and they're similar age to me. He says, I was 29 at the time. He said, and they look a similar age. He says, and we strike up a conversation and we walk towards monolith. And this lady, this woman says, touch the stone, it's warm. He says, what do you mean? She says, just put your hand on it, it's warm. He says, and I thought to myself, well, it is a warm day. Perhaps it is warm, you know. So I touched it. And sure enough, it were a little bit warm. She says, can you feel it pulsing? He said, no. So just put your hand there. She says, can you feel it pulsing? She says, no. No, not at all. And they're talking. No, mystical, they're just talking. Next thing, he's looking towards his wife, who can see all of this. And he says, I'm right, lovely meeting you kind of thing. I'm not sure exact words. I'm off now. And so they walked down the path with him. But before they did that, she reached out and gave him a really warm embrace, which he felt was odd. He felt it was strange. You know, never met him before, and suddenly this woman's hugging him. Says that this departed, and the man stepped forward and put his hand out. He says, but instead of I put my hand out to shake his hand, he shook my forearm. He says, and he clasped his arm around my forearm. And I think he said something like, safe journey, my friend, and or safe travels. And the three of them proceeded to walk down the path, passing his wife sat in the car. And they went on the way. Gets in car and she says, what have you been playing at? He says, what do you mean? He says, well, what were you doing? He said, well, I'm talking to them two people. He said, there were nobody there. He says, what do you mean? He's with the same woman now, by the way, who's kind of backed his story up. He says, you were on your own. You apart from doing a few weird gestures, you were. He says, they've just passed you. They've just passed the car door. He said, nobody's passed me. You were on your own. So where do we go with that? What did they encounter? What did he encounter? Is he a fantasist? If he is, he kept it from 1994. I'd want to dress that up if I were going to go to all that trouble of relaying a story. And bear in mind, he's not found me. The guy we're talking about earlier, Steve Ashbridge, said, "Hey, I've got a story. I'm going to try and get you the number of this guy who's told one of the plumbers at work. I think that's what it were, yeah." And I got the number. I've rang him up. I've had a long conversation with this guy, and I want some more information off him. And there's just little bits. I just want to get as tight as I can. And it's a fascinating story. Did his wife fall asleep as he's walking for them 10 minutes? Possible. You know, we've got to remain grounded. But at the end of the day, we all have to throw it out there that there's more than a grain of truth in what these people are telling us. So yeah. I don't know what you think to that, Matt. James, just an interesting one.
Here's an interesting one. And what you say as well is, you know, even if, you know, 500 stories you get and 499 are wrong, you only need one that's right, don't you?
You're spot but, on. You're absolutely spot on, mate, yeah.
Talking of ley lines, I've forgotten the name of the place. It's near Hutton the Hole, and there's a church with a crypt. Have you heard many stories about that? Because that's a fascinating place.
Near Huttonley Hole?
Yeah.
I haven't, no.
There's a little village, I've forgotten what it's called. Do you know? Matt's better at remembering things like this.
Not a clue.
But it's basically got ley lines, and then it used to be a pagan temple, and then the Viking, and these ley lines supposedly intersect on this point. It's a pagan temple, and then the Vikings came along and set up a Christian church there, and then Bede came along and did stuff. And the crypt is just in, like, the power. I could take complete skeptics, non-believers there.
You can feel it.
And not mention anything, just say, we're going to look at a church, yeah, and they will feel it. I've taken my kids there, and someone went, shh. And I went to apologize. It's a religious place. They were screaming and there was no one there. I took a skeptic there and she saw shadows of people moving around. You know, it's an amazing, so many people have got stories there.
And did you say that the Venerable Bede wrote about this, has he?
He was part of setting it up there. Yeah. Let me find the name of the place. Well, I'll ask you a question and I'll try and find the name.
Just while you're doing that, though, you know, the Venerable Bede, it's interesting that he talks about the fiery dragons in the sky, the spheres of light and the lights coming from the sea. And, you know, and he's just talking about the same things we're talking about, just with a different take on what, you know, we've just altered our vocabulary, haven't we, and adapted to the times, but they're talking about the same things. Sorry about that. You lost your train of thought there. What were you going to ask me?
Lastingham it was. I just found it. Lastingham Church.
Lastingham. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I do know where you mean now. Yeah.
And it is interesting where these, you know, different religions go, no, that's right there. That is the spot. That's where we're going to, you know, well, sometimes, you know, it's a high point, but other times it doesn't make sense. But it did
well,
to them.
Matt said, why put the Rudston monolith where the church was? You might not have said it like that, Matt, but it was other way around. A monolith were there. It predates the church. And a lot of these places, you know, sort of Christianity or religion stamped its mark on what they felt as paganism. And that could have been the reason. But it's amazing how it has survived the sort of this long without being sort of destroyed. I mean, there were talk of it being, well, I think I might have been pronouncing this long, but the Buta stone, the burial stone of a Viking called Rud. And I don't think there's any truth in that. There's talk, they used to call it the Rude Stone, as in it's a
fertility.
A fertility symbol, yeah. Fertilica, we're going to say. the Rude Stone monolith. So, you know, I suppose everybody's got a different interpretation. You know, there's said to be as much stone below ground as what there is above ground. Mm. And it were excavated in late 1800s by, I think it was one of the Sykeses. I might have got the name wrong, but I think it might have been Tatton Sykes. I might be wrong. But whichever one it was, they found vast quantities of human skulls.
Right.
And that, does that tell you then that it's been the place of some kind of sacrifice at some time? I don't know. But, you know, it's not just Paul thinking, you know, I might have got the name wrong, who found it, but it were excavated, and I'm sure that I'm probably not. But the skulls were found; it's all documented, so it's interesting nevertheless. It's like the Warren Percy, the old medieval village, which I'm sure you've both been to.
We've been there.
What a fascinating place, and there's other places close to Warren Percy that are just as fascinating, like the Fairy Stones, and. You know, these are places where if you're going to do night vigils, these are the places that I would want to be staying, probably more than the derelict church. I'd want to get myself up around these stones because there's reasons why they've attained that name. There's reasons why Willie Howe's got those stories attached to it of little people, little beings, because, you know, it spans it spans hundreds of years, and these locations are still throwing out the same types of phenomena. So, have you any more questions for me then, James?
Yeah, I know you've been really kind to give us an hour of your time. So,
no worries. Just fire away for a bit longer. I've just got a relative who's ill, and I rang for him the other day to speak to a doctor, and they're going to ring me. So I'm just conscious of that. But anyway.
I'd really like to get to kind of the Wolflands documentary. It's proved really successful. Have you had any more stories? And were you, like, from the documentary going out, and were you surprised at how successful it's been?
Yeah, in a way we were. Yeah, because it's not as mainstream as a lot of the UFO phenomena is. You know, you say 20 years ago, the UFO phenomena probably would be the cryptid phenomena is today, meaning it's just not. People aren't as accepting of it. And if you would have said to me 10 years ago, you're going to get involved in this, the subject of the cryptids, I'd have said, I don't think I am, you know. But when you start writing the book and you put the information out there and people come to you with these accounts, I'd be as bad as the people that I've just been talking about 30 minutes ago, 45 minutes ago, if I said, no, that don't interest me because I'm only interested in UFOs. There's a bleed through for it all. So yeah, Wolflands, the people that were coming forward, none of them knew each other. You know, the people who were camping in the forest close to Broxter and the gamekeeper and the people who've been around Raincliffe. And there's more stories, you know, that we never included. There were some guys on mopeds who'd just come for a run around, on their bikes and stopped for a cigarette in the middle of nowhere. Can't think the name of the location, but it's not far from Raincliffe Woods, and they claim that this thing parted trees and looked at them. And there's lots and lots of stories. There's a story from Spires Bank, that's near that's the other side. I'm trying to think what they call Leaf Howe, the farmhouse of Leaf Howe, which is derelict and boarded up. And, you know, I don't recommend anybody trying to get in this location or anything, but it's just a strip of a farmhouse. You know, they're very narrow, aren't they? They're very long, but very narrow. But it's boarded up. What's that got to do with the phenomena? Years ago, 1990s, school children used to go there for holidays and things. And this is one that we didn't include in Wolflands. And this guy then, as a schoolboy, went with his teachers. First of all, they'd seen lights in forest. Not spheres of light, but lights, areas of the forest that look really illuminated in distance. Once again, could have been people with lamps. But then as they're walking back in the dead of night, the teacher and several school children, there's a huge being pacing them, and they can see it from time to time in trees. And it's pacing them, just terrifying them. Get back to the farmhouse. One of the girls has to sleep in the room with the female teachers. Something's banging on the walls. There's all sorts of things happening. And it's all there. It's all around there. So, yeah there's loads. I don't say loads, but there's a lot more stories that are now coming through that we're getting. I went into Barnes Cliff whilst making Wolflands, and we never included it. I'll tell you why I never included it. I know I've written Wolflands and talked about all my own experiences, but it just seemed too convenient that we were making a film about the cryptids and I saw something. And I think, maybe I should have done, because I didn't not see it. And I'll tell you now, apart from Chris Wright, who were with me, and he didn't see it, I've not told anybody. You know, I told Chris when we were doing it, we went to other side at River. Have you been on where Derwent runs through there?
Yeah.
So we went to other side at River. It's thick with blackthorn and it's really hard going to get through. But so we walked along edge at River, and there's a place there where there's like a rocky outcrop that's pretty flat rock. And we're not talking like cliffs or anything. We're only talking like 10, 20 feet, and it runs along. And I just looked up, and there's the shape. I don't mean there's a cryptid, but there's a shape. Bearing in mind there's deer in forest in there. But there's a shape. There's a black thing just kind of gets up and moves away, and it was big. I only saw a black shape. And I don't mean a shadow. It's daytime, but I saw it. And I said, I told Chris what I'd seen, and I'm sort of scrambling to my feet. Even at my age, I'm quite fit and more than able to get up all these places. And I were up there. There were nothing there. Now, if it had been a deer, I don't think it'd have been that colour. It was black. And I just thought, well, this is too... People aren't going to have it. If I say, you know, during Wolflands, hey, we're just, hey guys, I've just filmed this, and I haven't got no proof of it, but this is what I'm telling you. People would have thought, what a load of, you know. So I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going with it. And this is probably the first time I've ever spoke about it. Chris Wright were with me. I don't know if you know Chris. He lives in Scarborough. He's all us around there mountain biking and things. It's Chris. Chris is in Wolflands. He's the guy that comes with us all the time. So just a strange one, because I do know that there's other reports of walkers through that particular area stopping people and saying, we think we've just seen a bear. There's no bears. Come on, give us heads a shake. There's nothing like that, is there? You know? So I don't know. If you'd, like I said, 10 years ago, if you'd have said to me, you know, this is going to be of some interest to you, that you're going, I'd have said, I don't think it is. But you can't deny the reports just because it just seems off the wall. It's just unbelievable. And what we're talking about, quite honestly, is unbelievable, isn't it? It's just, we know that these things do not exist in the flesh and blood form, or don't think they do. How could they avoid detection? How could they go unnoticed, or just getting fleeting glimpses of these things with gaps of years in between? Something that big can't be a vegetarian. It can't, not even an omnivore. Yeah, they look like they need protein to me. Do you know what I mean? Or the descriptions that we're getting looks like something that needs protein. I don't know. But just going to jump in about a bit there, guys. So sorry about that.
No, that's all right. I mean, from my kind of experiences, I think you are more likely to see it because you've gone out there to film it, because the if it is like all these things...
Yeah, you're open to it, yeah.
Yeah, the consciousness is then attached. And, you know, when I'm doing my podcast and I'm talking about paranormal stuff, quite often that's when the poltergeist will throw something, you know, across the room. And I've had recordings of it, you know, where I'm recording, and then last time it was some batteries got thrown from that side of the room to this side of the room. So, yeah, it does make sense. I don't know if you've got any questions, Matt, but I think one thing I wanted to ask you before we finished up is when you started on this journey, you were searching for answers. What answers have you got?
I haven't. Seriously. all I've got is, and once again, I mean, the subtitle of that book is The Truth That Leaves No Proof. And I'm still at that point, mate. I'm still at that point. But all I've got, I think we all know in our own minds, Matt, yourself, people listening to this, unless you're just going to flat blank close it down and say, what a load of rubbish. Most people listening to podcasts such as yours and such as the Truth Proof podcast that we do are doing it because they're looking for their own answers. Most of the time, we're not going to get that concrete proof. It seems like whatever it is, it's behind that firewall and we can't penetrate it. But we're getting validation. People are getting validation through people like you, James, and people like you, Matt. And I think it's good that I can tell Matt's fairly, he's open-minded but grounded just from this brief conversation. And I think you're the same. And I think we've all got to stay like that. Let's not be too blown away by a satellite in sky and said, this is visitation from aliens. I think we've, you know, I've took all these reports, all these people, and not everybody's telling truth. Not everybody's on the level. And you've got to filter through all that, because when you say not everybody, some are, some of them are on the level, and it just adds more validation to what we're all involved in. And we just keep chipping away at it, don't we?
Yeah. You get satellites. I get pictures of dust. And same, we've got orbs.
Yeah, the dust. Yeah, the orbs. Yeah. Or I'll tell you a good one. I mean, and I get it on my own cameras. I mean, this morning I took a GoPro out and I flattened a couple of batteries, and I've got a P900 with me. They're great for long distance stuff, but they're not really good. Yeah, shouldn't really say that, should I? But because it's a great camera, the P900, but it's not brilliant in low light or for filming, even though it says 1080p. But where am I going? A lot of times you'll take a picture, a bit of sunlight, you get a green orb. It's just a green orb. It's just a lens flare. It's just an artifact of the camera. And I'm never rude to people, but they want to show you their picture. Look, I've captured this green orb. So what do you do? I say, oh, brilliant pictures. You know, it does look interesting. Are you sure that might not be lens flare? And suddenly you've offended somebody. So and if you ignore them, I sent him my pictures and he didn't answer me. You can't win. You know, I'm not always right. I'm sure you guys aren't always right. but we've just got to remain as grounded as possible. Yes, this unknown, it's real. There's something real and bona fide to it, but it's not all unexplained phenomena. Some of it is perfectly explainable.
And if there is stuff that is real and we can't explain it, what do you think the point is in terms of our reality?
The point of us looking for it, the point of us trying to explain it, because we know there's something out there, James. We know there's something that's interacting with us. But what are the reasons? And I can see you guys are more into the ghost side of it, the poltergeist side of it. What's waiting for us after this life? Because what we're dealing with now, what you're dealing with, could be part of what's going to be there when this life, if it ends, when this life ends and something else begins. And that's the big question, isn't it? The validation. I mean, and we might not like what's the other side of it. I don't know. I don't want to be too negative. It might be brilliant. I have no idea.
Can't be worse than this one, can it?
Well, Christ, I know it's with things that's happening in the world. Don't set me off down that road, as well. We'll be getting channel closed down, but it's not great at the moment, is it? Let's face it.
It isn't. Matt, do you have any questions before we just close up?
No, I think the one I would like to ask is, where do you go from here? You've had all of these experiences. Is there something that you would really like to move forward into and look into more, or a test or something that you're really excited about at the moment?
I'm really excited. Excited, is that the word? I'm really enthusiastic, Matt. Went to Scarborough last week, spoke to a good friend of mine who'd been involved in the Skoll project. He used to live in Halifax. Then he, I'll not say his name, but then he moved to Spain with Robin Foy, who wrote the book about the Skoll project and were the founder of the Skoll project. And I'm sure you're both aware of what it was, if you're not, look into it. And we're starting it. We're not starting the Skoll project, so I don't want people to think that. But we're starting the same principles, and we've got a group of people. We'll be in Scarborough doing it. It's going to be in a basement because that's where that's originated, and not in Scarborough, but that environment, and that's what we're going to get involved in. I mean, and I went. I've known this guy for quite a few years, and he used to come onto Cliff Tops with us. And then when he moved to Spain, but he's moved back now. He's got a property in Scarborough, and that's what we. So I'm interested in that, because it weren't just spirit phenomena that were coming through. There were alien type phenomena coming through. There were apports, and it's one of the most documented, most scientifically looked into. Experimentation with spirit that's ever been done. And seriously, guys, have you looked into it at all?
No, I don't think I've heard that one. No,
you need to. You'll find a lot on internet about it. And so I'm really enthusiastic about that. I'm really looking forward to that. I've turned a few things down. We're having this relative who's ill. I've just turned down Seattle to Alaska a cruise, talking about unexplained. Howard Hughes has asked me for the last 3 years if I want to do his cruises, and I've had to turn them down. So obviously I don't want anything to happen to my relative, but these things, I'm looking forward to in the future at some point to sort of jumping on board some of them, not literally. Amazing, we're talking about cruises and getting involved with that. And just immersing myself into more and more of this. What you're involved in interests me. It's all interesting. We should just lay it all out on the table and just sort of embrace it, because it's there, it's out there, and it's real. And I don't think any of us are too blown away by what we're looking at and thinking everything relates to an unexplained. Years ago, I talked to a lady called Muriel Rowbottom and her daughter Sandra, lovely people. And in 1994, they were the ladies that got the pictures of the aliens outside their window at Sproatley, the farmhouse. And it made the newspapers, the little TV clips about it. And I went and visited them several times. Well, I visited Muriel several times. And I visited her and her daughter once, me and Steve Ashbridge. And that kind of thing interests me, just because it's 1994 and I've a little bit more of information come to light recently about the Sproatley aliens from an independent witness that's got information about it. So these things, even though they're historic, they're never quite dead. Danes Dyke this morning, coming back 20 to 7, bumped into a guy, we're talking. I told him, I've just had a walk on beach. There's a seal just as you're going down. It's alive, you know, it's just laid there resting up, young grey seal, and we're having a natter, and asked me what I was doing. I thought, well, I ain't going to tell him in too much detail because he's a complete stranger. But I said, yeah, I just, you know, like taking photographs of area and things. And I said, a big cat's been seen in area. Just throw it out there, you know, a little fishing up. He said, I live in Flamborough. I've seen it. And so he got my details. And I said, he said, I don't know exact date. I think it was 2015. But when I get home, I've wrote it in a diary. He says, and I'll contact you. Whether he will or not, I don't know. Well, it's just never ending, I guess, the yeah. quest, the answer to all it all is, it's just never ending. And we've just got to keep moving forward, haven't we? Let's not be too negative. I hope I'm not.
Yeah, no, it's been absolutely fascinating. And thank you so much. I say people have requested you coming on for so long. It's great to have you.
Well, we'll do it again, James. You know, I've got no problem. And seeing as we're all pretty local, you know, we could meet up somewhere like Raincliffe, and I can do a little bit of filming at my Truth Proof channel, and yeah, that'd be good.
We can investigate the pulse one night.
Yeah, that would be good. And just before we close this down, then, can I tell people, if you don't mind?
I was just about to ask you. Yeah, you've got your books. Well, as I say, where can people find you, and what can they see what you do? Because you've got your books, you've got the documentary, you've got your Truth Proof channel. You've just interviewed Robbie Williams as well, which is massive. Tell everyone, a bit about that.
Well, our interview with Robbie, you know, we've been going to do it for a few years, to be honest with you. But he's always flying about everywhere. So he's in a different orbit, a different world to me, at least, anyway. Well, let's face it. And yeah, he's just got an interesting unexplained, and Rob's pretty grounded. He's, you know, what you see is what you get, and he's just a same kind of guy, normal person, same as you two. And yeah, he agreed to do an interview, so we had an hour and a quarter talking to him and our other good friend Mick Park, who was also into music, and in a big way, it was dance music in 2000s. Mick were really into the dance music, or still is. Still is producing music. And yeah, it was just to talk about the unexplained. Nothing too heavy. Just it was three friends, essentially, because we speak, I wouldn't say all the time, but quite regular. So I just enjoyed it. And we did, week prior to that, we did Joe Wood, or a few weeks prior, you know, Ronnie Wood's former wife. And last week, we interviewed the guys from the Wilson Ranch, Mount Wilson Ranch, which were interesting, you know, which is not close. Do you know, here's my lack of knowledge. I thought the Wilson Ranch and Skinwalker Ranch, I don't mean they could see each other, but I thought they were a few miles apart. Because they were both owned by Robert Bigelow, weren't they? And, you know, and both known for unexplained phenomena. But they're not. They're about a four-hour drive apart. So
that is close in states, isn't it?
Yeah, people have said that. Not in my world. I live in this little bubble. So, yeah, where were I going with that? Sorry, because you threw me with Robbie interview. Yeah, that were good. The books, you can get them through the Truth Proof website, truthproof.uk. If you want the Kindle versions, obviously they're on Amazon. And the DVD, that can be got truthproof.uk or Amazon Prime. And I have another book on the go at the moment, but how the ages we, to be honest with you. But I'm calling it the sub-universe, the submerged universe, because I think the potential for some of this, at least, could be below the oceans of the world. And we've got lots of reports from it. And other than that, it's been great talking to you, Matt, and you, James. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much for joining us. And we'll speak again.
No worries, mate. You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the 14 News Podcast. Please check the show notes for the link to Ko-fi to buy James a cup of coffee to help him stay awake while he writes the show. You can also show your appreciation by leaving a review and telling your friends. Until next time.